Good morning and welcome to How's It
Lot Talk Radio.
Did I hear somebody say we weren't through yet? We haven't played enough music, huh? Is that it? Okay. Hit him, Adam.
Some of our music that we have uploaded. There's a intro song that is done by Tim Rogers and the fellows. It has a lot of noise in it, and I am going to try to find that intro song. And what it's going to be doing, we're going to be going through a lot of songs, looking for that song. And we hope that you will stay with us and work through this with us. One of the things about internet radio is that it is a... Okay, let's try. That's the William Brothers. We're going to be going through a lot of songs. If you want to be hang around with us, you can. If not, you can not tune in with you. But either way, we're going to be working through a lot of music, trying to locate a particular song. It's an intro song, and we hope that we'll be able to find it. Let's put something on. This is here's the mix of life on earth. And I'll play it while we go in through these songs. As if it would play. The internet has been playing with us as well this morning. Whenever you push a song for it to play, the internet goes out and the turntable, which the song is on, it just turns and turns and turns and no sound. It happened the other morning with Miss Davis and the Push in Christ broadcast. In fact, it was off for nearly 20 minutes or so before the song started playing, and it's doing the same thing this morning. Evidently, the internet is off. And I'm trying to get it to come back on, but it don't seem to want to do that. So the song that we tried to play is The Mix of Life. This is the challenges that we go through in the country, which I am in down south here in Alabama with the internet. Internet comes on and goes out whenever it gets ready. It doesn't matter what it is or what it is. And guess what? We are at the max in which is the internet, which is 5G, and it's still not working. That's one of the problems that we have here with the internet and all of the situations involved with the internet is that no matter what you do, how you do it, there is a situation whereas sometimes it just do not work. We're in the studio here right now, and we are live. Let me go to my recorder. Okay, we just pushed the recorder. We let's go back and restart that, because the late on that is dragging as well. That's the thing about the internet. Let's start it again. Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to House of Gospel Blog Talk Radio. Coming to you from 231 6th Avenue. We are just turning on the recorder. We're having problems with our internet service this morning, and we hope that you will stick around with us as we play some music, going through a number of music that we got loaded here, but it looks like it's not going to allow us to play any of that music. We just pushed one button, which says the mix of life, and we push it in another one, see will it come on. That indicates that the internet is definitely down. Definitely down. It is down. All right. Let's see here. We had some music queued up to play in case that this did not work, and we'll upload this in its place. We gonna try reloading, and evidently that's gonna lose everything right there. Yeah, reloading will lose everything. Access to this resource is denied. Your client has not supplied the correct authorization. Oh man, that means that FrontierNet is who we got our service through. FrontierNet is who we got our service through. And we are going to continue here in the studio, here with High Super Gospel Blog Talk Radio. We have been thinking about in the hours and days ahead. There is another article. This page, to view this page, you must log in on this area of www.wifi.com. Net here. Your password will be sent encrypted. All of that is already hooked up, and that thing keeps indicating to me that we are not hooked up to the internet. We're going to go to some music that we had queued up. Obviously, Black and Gospel Radio Mix Soul is a mix of secular music and some of the music that we play sometimes here. This one here is called Backstabbers. Going on here. In the world, you know, sometimes, we're going to turn it up a little bit. Sometimes in the world, people do stab you in the back. You'd be wondering what be going on, why such is taking place. But backstabbers are reality in the world today. Oh, by the way, today is Thursday. It's a Thursday morning. It may be a Friday wherever you are. It may be a different time wherever you are. Because people listen to this broadcast at different times in different places. And we thank all of you for listening. This is House C Production Gospel Blog Talk Radio. And we're going to turn that mic off. But one of the things about good music, we play all styles of music here. We play some country. We play a little bit of all of it. We're going to keep trying to load the internet. We don't know how long it's going to take, but we're going to keep trying for it anyway. This site cannot be reached. It's back up now. I wonder how long. Let's go back to the studio. See what it's doing. Because remember when we did it before, when we tried to go to the studio, let's go to the studio now. This is a radio test mix of all styles for October 18, 2000. Check and clean up update. Let's go back to the studio. Let's see what it's doing right now. Okay, it appears to be working right now. we're going to let that music play until we're going to scroll through all of our songs here. We're going to let that song play while we're looking. And when we find a song, this is Don't Let the Devil Ride, new ad blessing team from Carlton Barber, Radio Gospel Play When You're Ready, Reverend Matthew Mikins and Highway Travelers, Soul of the Soul of America, meeting with discussion with Bill Mars, talking about the soul of America. What is happening to the soul of America? Pearson, yet holding on. Are you yet holding on? Bishop Charles E. Blake, the West Angels, the Conjuring Mass Choir. I Know a Place and I'll Take You There. You remember that song by the Staple Singers? College Career Fair. We do a college career fair. I think next November we will be doing that college career day at J.F. Shields again through the Alumni Association, Monroe County Training. J.F. Shields, Monroe County Alumni Association. As we turn that down a little bit more. The next one is The Chosen Brothers Living for the Lord. Darren Hobbs CD, Deborah Snipes Live CD. Don't Let the Devil Ride, one of that, Don't Let the Devil Ride, a gentleman that used to be doing drugs, he blew the harmonica, and he is riding with God now, Let the Devil Go. Everything going to be all right. This is me, yours truly, Freddie C. Howard, singing God's praise. Freddie Howard singing Battle for My Soul. The Golden Crown's come too far. The manager of the Golden Crowns is going through something right now. He's has been diagnosed with cancer, and they indicate that it has spread it. And we are praying for him as the manager for the Golden Crowns. We've had the opportunity to do a sound production for them up in Gaston, Alabama, as well as down here at Artists at the Lake last year. Illegal immigration the issue has not been resolved yet. It's in the thaws of the Trump era, so ain't no telling what lot to happen there. Come Too Far by the Golden Crowns. They was on a tour. I don't know how the effect of that, the manager's been ill, is affecting that tour. Rather need an update from that with Mr. Tony Sharper, who is the person in charge of Sharper Records, which Golden Crown is on the Sharper Records label. Okay. I see I have two Come Too Far by the Golden Crowns. I need to make a note to eliminate one of them. Let me turn my paper over here and let me keep in my notes. As we move around here in the studio on a Thursday morning, check up and clean up. We hope you as well as the radio mix. There's another thing that we have here on this station, which is direct. I'm going to try something else here. I'm going to turn down my monitor. In fact, I'm going to turn it all the way off and then turn it on and hope I don't get any feedback at all. Let's see. I got the self, just my mic hook up. I'm going to turn it up just a hair and hope I don't get any feedback. Nothing yet. We're testing and moving around in the studio, trying to make broadcast better for you. A little bit more. Nothing yet. We're going to keep trying until we get it up just enough to hear it. Nothing yet. Sometime. There it is. All right, it's up just enough to hear it. We are using our iTunes we're also using our iTunes. That's where that music is coming from. That's Miss Ripperton playing in the background. Kind of hear a little bit of an echo, but I don't know how that's going to sound. I'm recording it as well. See how what the effect is going to be when we All right. We have mics. We have a condenser mic as well. We're going to turn that condenser mic down. All right. What we're going to do, I need to make a note of the Golden Crowns Come Too Far, Part 2. I have it recorded twice, loaded, got to eliminate one. Golden Crowns Come Too Far. Remove one of them. All right, let's scroll on down. This one here is a song called Hallelujah Anyhow. When you're going through something, and no matter what it is, you do something. Turn that down just a little bit more. I can sit here in the background. Three, what is happening on the feedback is that my what do we need to do? Mm-hmm. We got the okay. Maybe 1, 2, 2, 2. And that's the zero. My other thing. We're gonna look down here to see, can we see the master? As we move around in the studio, we are live on the air, trying to make everything better for you. Let's get down here a little bit closer. Make sure we're looking at what we need to look at. Maybe. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Monitors, okay. I can turn the monitor down. Turn it right there. It's not affecting it at all. Reverb. Let's take some of the reverb off of that monitor. Master level. Yeah. That's the one we were using there. Okay. Let's continue here. We're trying to get it set so that we can have an outstanding broadcast for you when we do live broadcasting. Now, this is another mic here in the studio. I'm going to bring it up to... it's one of the mics that we have in the studio that just picks up everything as we're doing in the studio. We're going to leave it on and make a note that I turned that on right about 14 minutes. 14 minutes. Turn on. All right. Okay. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, testing. That gives us a pretty good sound so far as that mic. All right, let's go back over here to the studio. I was Hallelujah Anyhow where we left off. Hillboy Incorporated, CD Best of Lee Sterling and The Holy Wind. That is some of the music music. Hillboy Music, Tony Vick. Okay, House of Reverend Gospel Morning Show is in February 17th, No Turning Back, 2017. House of Reverend Gospel June broadcast, Honoring Men of Color. We're looking for a song of noise in it, and we want to remove that entirely from our songs that we got in storage here, so that whenever we click on a song of the quality that we want. Introduction, Block Out Radio Show started recording on GarageBand. Let's cut things down and see whether or not that is that song with the noise in it. Let's cut off the iTunes. We just cut off iTunes. Now we're going to go back to the studio. Let's see, is this the song that we got that noise in? Okay, that appears to be all right. Okay, this is Jazz at House of Blessing Gospel Part 4. We play some jazz around here as well. Jazz Night at House of Blessing Gospel Part 1. Joe Lagoon, you know, you lost him a while ago from the Mighty Clouds of Joy. Lenny Bradford, Because He Lives, I Can Face Tomorrow. Luther Barnes, Come Fly With Me. We want to thank Luther Barnes for giving us permission to play all of his music. That is outstanding. Luther Barnes and the Redbird Gospel Singers. Luther Barnes lynching into Saturday morning open information. That was a program we did in cooperation with the story I mentioned up in the big studio there last year, but the museum up in Montgomery. I mentioned Stevenson, the one that helped free an inmate there at Holman Prison that I had the opportunity to be with. He had been on death row for a while. Brian Lewis Stevenson was involved in that freeing of an inmate there at Holman Prison that had been unjustly incarcerated. It's an example of the racial disparities and impriorities in sentencing people. That was a powerful story, and he's still out there telling the story. New ad, Greatly Exalted, Kelly Lewis, new ad, Love, okay, new ad, Maurice Mazik, powerful artist. New ad, Michael Carter, I Love to Call Jesus, Old Time Gospel, Old Landmarks. That's a good old time gospel music day. Peggy Moore, we had an awesome interview with Peggy Moore, and well, there's a son on base there. They're all over Facebook as well and other places. He's opening up a recording studio, I believe, for artists, and I wish him all of the success with it. It ain't about no luck. It's about preparation and prayer and faith. That's what it's all about. Radio Gospel Crown Him with Patricia Gibbs. Radio Gospel Country. That's some of the country music that we got loaded here. Radio Gospel Play, Anytime God's Got My Back, Denise LaSalle. We recorded about 3 hours of Denise LaSalle's music last night and added it to iTunes. We want to thank Spotify, who we are paying Spotify through a Eliminates Commercials, where we upload some of the music here. Ryan Anthony, I Will Trust You. This was a powerful story, an interview that we did with a young man in regards to his son, a handicapped child, was abused in the school system, and he died, and as a result of that abuse in the school system, and that's his story, and he's a champion and fighter now for kids that can't speak for themselves. That was a good story. Reverend Tyrone Williams, we had the opportunity to be interact with him years ago on a Martin Luther King celebration that we did at the Old Team Center, which is the Farm Conference Center now here in Monroe County. And Reverend Tyrone Williams and his group came down and gave us an awesome music. Ron Moore, Railroad 77, When I Die. That's an interview we did several days ago. You can still find it on our page. Ron Moore, he's a gospel rap artist with a story to tell. Sam Cooke, I came by that story, by the way, of Tony Sharper. The Sam Cooke story is already out there. But this was the story about Sam Cooke and his battles with the record industry and what was taking place and his breakaway and some of the door-opening things that he was doing as a young artist. Sam Cooke broke the molds of how artists get away from the, at that time, record holders, people that had records and control the artists and everything they do. And there is a tone that indicates that perhaps the reason why he was killed was the fact of what he was doing. Now, he fell into the trap of being a womanizer and a lover and all those kind of things like that. And he was on a stretch with his wife and family and different things like that. But he fell into the trap which the media sets up for you, the devil sets up for you when you don't do things right and how you're supposed to do it. Sounds of Blackness, that's a powerful group. Life Mix, Supreme 7, Crying Days, All Power. We want to thank Mr. Francine for that artist bringing them to our attention. Supreme 7, they are a powerful gospel group. The William Brothers, Doug and Melvin, John, Doug and Melvin Williams, Twinkie Clark and Friends, Tyrone Williams, Because of You. That's a good song. The William Brothers, more of it. One Time God, 30 Gospel Greats. On Time God, 30 Gospel Greats. All right. Let's see here. This here that has no numbers whatsoever, no name. It just has 12, 13, 16. We're going to listen to this and see what it is and make a correction. Seven Sons of Soul, Witnesses Part 2. Alabama Civil Rights History interview with Mr. H.B. Williams and Nanny Williams. Oh, that was a powerful interview. We know him personally. We had the opportunity to interact with his wife several days ago at the political rally where the Democratic political rally there on the courthouse square, on the courthouse lawn with the Alabama Monroe County Executive Democratic Committee. Ms. Carol Joan Banks is the head of that Democratic Executive Committee with a lot of local people here attending. America, your time is up. The President Donald Trump reveals the American soul. Oh, this, play a little bit of that. Let's see.
Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In late October, Donald Trump sent out a tweet that may have surprised many of his followers. In the tweet, he linked to a video of filmmaker Michael Moore, along with the words, "I agree, M.M. Flint." That's Michael Moore's Twitter handle. Trump went on to say to all Americans, "I see you and I hear you. I am your voice. Vote, drain the swamp with me on November 8th. Well, Trump's tweet included a four-minute audio recording pulled from Michael Moore's new film, Michael Moore in Trumpland. The recording was edited to make it sound like Michael Moore was endorsing Trump. Well, in response, Moore tweeted, quote, "Look at this Orwellian tweet by Trump. Donald, you either haven't seen my movie or you are conning your followers. The clip you show is doctored," unquote. Well, we end today's show with the undoctored clip from Michael Moore's film and get response to the controversy from Michael Moore himself. This is from Michael Moore in Trumpland.
Donald Trump, came to the Detroit Economic Club.
Internet
and stood there in front
again.
Of the Ford Motor executives
and
said,
was going to play that.
If you close these factories as you're planning to do in Detroit and build them in Mexico, I'm going
to
put a 35% tariff on those cars when
you
send them back and nobody's going
to
buy them.
You have in place.
It was an amazing thing to see. No politician, Republican or Democrat, had ever said anything like
that
to these executives. And it was music to the ears of people in Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, the Brexit states.
Okay, I can turn it down from the studio.
You live here in Ohio. You know what I'm talking about. Whether Trump means it or not, it's kind of irrelevant because he's saying the things to people who are hurting.
And, this is,
and it's why every beaten down, nameless, forgotten working stiff who used to be part of what was called the middle class loves Trump. He is the human Molotov cocktail that they've been waiting for. The human hand grenade that they can legally throw into the system that stole their lives from them. And on November 8th, Election Day, although they lost their jobs, although they've been foreclosed on by the bank, next came the divorce, and now the wife and kids are gone. The car's been repoed. They haven't had a real vacation in years. They're stuck with the Obamacare bronze plan where you can't even get a Percocet. They've essentially lost everything they had except one thing. The one thing that doesn't cost them a cent and is guaranteed to them by the American Constitution, the right to vote. They might be penniless. They might be homeless. They might be over and stuff. It doesn't matter because it's equalized on that day. A millionaire has the same number of votes as the person without a job. One. And there's more of the former middle class than there are in the millionaire class. So on November 8th, the dispossessed will walk into the voting booth, be handed a ballot, close the curtain, and take that lever, or felt pen or touchscreen, and put a big X in the box by the name of the man who has threatened to upend and overturn the very system that has ruined their lives.
And then give me your points of view on it.
Donald J. Trump.
If you got a song,
they see that the elites who ruined their lives hate Trump. Corporate America hates Trump. Wall Street hates Trump. The career politicians hate Trump. The media hates Trump after they loved him and created him and now hate him. Thank you, media. The enemy of my enemy is who I'm voting for on November 8th. Yes, on November 8th, you, Joe Blow, Steve Blow, Bob Blow, Billy Blow, Billy Bob Blow, all the Blows get to go and blow up the whole goddamn system because it's your right.
It's a problem. It is an absolute problem.
Trump's election is going to be the biggest deal ever recorded in human history.
America, your time is up to President Donald Trump.
And it will feel
and this is truthful, by the way. It's like this political situation that we're in. Donald Trump
for a day.
Anything that he wants to.
Yeah, maybe a week.
I mean, anything.
Possibly a month.
And these people.
And then, like the Brits, who wanted to send a message, so they voted to leave Europe. Only to find out that if you vote to leave Europe, you actually have to leave Europe. And now they regret it. All the Ohioans, Pennsylvanians, Michiganders, and Wisconsinites of Middle England, right? They all voted to leave, and now they regret it, and over 4 million of them have signed a petition to have a do-over. They want another election. It ain't going to happen because you use the ballot as an anger management tool.
All of the people in Washington, right here at my front door,
and now you're
know what I said and why I said it.
And the rest of Europe, the rest of Europe, they're like, bye, Felicia.
Thank you.
So when the rightfully angry people of Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin find out after a few months in office that President Trump wasn't going to do a damn thing for them, it'll be too late to do anything about it. But I get it. You wanted to send a message. You had righteous anger and justifiable anger.
America. People in America is big enough food.
Well,
they're gonna put him back in.
Message sent.
They're gonna put him back in there. You know why?
Good night, America. You've just elected the last president of the United States.
You just elected the last president of the United States, Michael Moore, in studio here in New York. Your response to yourself.
Well, that's what I think. You know, the United States that we know now, for better or worse, won't be the United States that we know after 4 years of Donald Trump. So we all, those of us who are upset at the things about this country that we're upset about, the way to fix it is to put Trump in there, you know, to blow it up. But, you know, that whole piece, it's funny you played that. A couple of right-wing websites doctored that piece, and they cut me off right after, and when you vote for Trump, and it'll feel good. And they cut it right there, like I wanted to say, like it's going to feel good. And, of course, the next line is, as you just showed, you know, for a day, maybe a week. And this went all over these right-wing websites last week. And iTunes, like, sent me a text saying, what's going on? Like, tens of thousands of people suddenly in the middle of the day are buying your film. And we were already doing well. I mean, it's been at number one on iTunes for almost a couple of weeks. I said, the right-wingers are telling people to go buy this movie because they've been shown only this one little bit of it. And I was feeling kind of, I know I shouldn't, this is just bear with me. I'm the Irish Catholic in me. I was feeling guilty that all these poor conservative right-wing dudes were losing $5 to iTunes, and then they get my movie and they realize, you know, oh no, and they can't get their money back. So I called up Megyn Kelly and got her producer, and I said, can I come on Fox tonight? You know, I know I'm not a usual Fox guest, but can I come on? And I just want to tell people to stop buying my movie because I just feel bad they're losing $5, you know. And so they had me on, and I told them that. I said, people, I mean, I want you to watch my movie. I said, I think you might learn a few things, because I have in the movie, I have a number of gently disguised facts that will, you know, I hope would might seep in a little bit. But I just can't take your money if you're thinking that this is some love poem to Donald Trump, because it's the opposite of that.
Well, it wasn't only them, but him. It was Donald Trump himself who tweeted out this video.
Correct.
He wrote what? Michael Moore, to all Americans, I see you and I hear you. I am your voice. Vote to drain the swamp with me on 11/8. And he linked to a YouTube of the edited video.
Yes, yes, which only then drove hundreds of thousands of more people to my movie, maybe millions at this point. And it's like, I looked at this, I thought, I cannot believe this, right? So does he think, okay, he clearly hasn't seen the movie, right? So does he think, this is, honest, Amy, this is what I think it is. I think he saw that his name was in the title of a movie. And he's such a narcissist that he just went, hey, there's a movie about me. It's got my name in it, you know? He doesn't talk like that, by the way. That was like Western Michigan accent.
Academy Award-winning filmmaker Michael Moore, director of the new film Michael Moore in Trumpland. And that does it for our show. To see part one of our discussion with Michael, go to democracynow.org. Also, we're doing a five-hour election night special. That's Tuesday night, 7 to midnight Eastern Time. Check it out at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkman, Meche, Carla Wogler, Agatha Dean Guster. I'm Amy Goodman.
Famed reporter Bob Woodward made headlines once again this past week with his new book about the Trump White House entitled Fear. This morning, his first television interview with our David Martin.
You look at the operation of this White House, and you have to say, let's hope to God we don't have a crisis.
For Bob Woodward, that is the bottom line to all the jaw-dropping chaos and discord described in his new book, Fear, Trump in the White House, published by Simon & Schuster, a division of CBS.
People who work for him are worried that he will sign things or give orders that threaten the national security or the financial security of the country or the world.
Aides, including then Chief Economic Advisor Gary Cohn and White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter, literally stole documents like this one off the president's desk in the Oval Office.
So he wouldn't sign them because they realized that this would endanger the country.
How do they get away with that?
He doesn't remember. If it's not on his desk, if it's not immediately available for action, it goes away.
Unelected officials like Cohn and Porter intentionally thwarting the actions of the elected president, the exact reverse of what a White House staff is supposed to do. Going back to Richard Nixon and Watergate, this is the ninth White House Woodward has covered.
Then the eight others, I never heard of people on the staff in the White House engaging in that kind of extreme action.
In Woodward's telling, Donald Trump does not see America as the indispensable nation. He sees it as an international sucker taken advantage of by allies and trading partners. He complained his advisors don't know anything about business. All they want is to protect everybody that we pay for. According to Woodward, the president is obsessed by the fact the U.S. pays $3.5 billion a year to station troops in South Korea as the first line of defense against the North. I don't know why they're there, he said at one meeting. Let's bring them all home. At another meeting, Secretary of Defense James Mattis starkly explained why the U.S. has 28,000 troops in Korea. We're doing this in order to prevent World War III.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
The standoff with North Korea has been eased for the moment by the Singapore summit, which brought together two leaders who had been trading nuclear threats and schoolyard insults.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
The president later made that little Rocket Man on Twitter, which he told Staff Secretary Rob Porter may be my best ever. When Porter asked if it might provoke Kim, the president replied,
"It's leader versus leader, man versus man, me versus Kim."
The most dangerous moment of the standoff, Woodward says, came when the president went to work on another tweet.
He drafts a tweet saying we are going to pull out dependents from South Korea, family members of the 28,000 people there.
That tweet was never sent because of a back-channel message from North Korea that it would regard a pullout of dependents as a sign the U.S. was preparing to attack.
At that moment, there was a sense of profound alarm in the Pentagon leadership that, my God, one tweet, and we have reliable information that the North Koreans are going to read this as an attack is imminent.
We are going to appoint Mad Dog Mattis as our Secretary of Defense.
The president surrounded himself with generals, active duty, and...
Shut that off. I don't know. That won't play. It still won't play. Reloading the whole broadcast. It's going to let us do it. We got still on. Okay. Let's go back down and find out where we were. Let's see. Down on Black says, okay. Thank you, Clark, Tyrone Williams. Let's see, can we hear Boycott as we started it off before? All right. Okay. Let's seek and we hear it. We don't hear anything yet.
I ain't never done nobody wrong.
Okay. All right, there it comes. See, we shut it off. Now, that's how it normally should work. That's how it normally should work. When you turn it, when you hit the button, it should come on and you should hear it, and it go back off. But once the internet, you can't, you have no control of your switchboard. King for Dr. Martin Luther King, Luther Vandross, his music. We got a master designer, global applause, memories, stay with me, memories. New ad, politics. This is a song. This is something we uploaded a while back.
It feels like America is more divided than it's been in decades. Getting along with those who disagree on politics has become difficult, tearing families and communities apart. It seems like now, politics isn't just about what you think, but who you are. It's personal. We've seen this feeling cause growing extremism on both ends of the political spectrum. The events in Charlottesville, Virginia, showed the ability of white nationalists to assemble off the internet and into the real world. Earlier that same summer, left-wing extremists essentially shut down Evergreen State College because a white professor dared show up on a day white people were asked to be absent from campus. And it seems like left-wing and right-wing extremists are just getting the other side even more riled up. There's a name for this problem, and it's called identity politics. Identity politics is the tendency for people of a particular race, religion, gender, or ethnicity to organize politically around that special interest for the sole purpose of advancing that interest without concern or regard for any larger group or collective. You might ask, what's so bad about identity politics? You wouldn't care about identity politics if it was your identity group being discriminated against. This is a misunderstanding of what identity politics is. There is a time for identities to come together when they are being discriminated against as a class, but the goal of these movements are only ethical when they seek to remove the political impact of identity, not enforce it. The civil rights movement is a great example. The civil rights movement was not identity politics. It was about destroying identity politics, creating a society where we'd see people as individuals rather than members of groups. In the words of Martin Luther King Jr.,
says, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
That's not in line with the recent push on the left to create black-only dorms at colleges, or women-only film screenings, or spaces without white people. Nor is it in line with those on the right who believe America should be a Christian-only nation, or want to mandate gender roles, and obviously not those who want a white ethno-state. Let's treat other identities as we would have them treat ours. There is beauty in different people with different ideas and of different backgrounds coming together to form America. But when it comes to politics and policy, let's treat people as people, recognizing and celebrating their unique characteristics as individuals instead of reducing them into an identity group. I'm Joseph Klein. Thanks for watching.
That right there is an indication.
How do you use fiction to comment on reality when reality currently seems so fantastic?
Yeah, well, it's a question I think many of us have been asking ourselves. I mean, I had dinner with Ian McEwan a few nights ago, and we were agreeing that if we had written down what has really happened in the world and offered it to our publishers as a novel, the publisher would have turned it down for being too unbelievable.
And that was a upload that we did several weeks ago, 7/26, a couple months ago. 3 months ago, this October, the 6th October. But anyway, that was about identity politics. It is all this stuff. Say, for instance, take like the Republicans use the word socialism to describe political candidates on the Democratic side. And Lord have mercy, our poor GOP white folks just love it. And if you say socialism, anybody say socialism is somehow such a bad word, and that's what the Democrats about, socialism. So trying to refer to something communistic, something that's in some foreign country. It just uses people, just people all torn and pulled in so many different directions. It's just sick what's going on in this country. But God's going to get tired of it one day. He keeps sending us signs like the storms and stuff that's wiping out so many sections of different parts of the country. He's doing all that he can to bring us to the senses of who we need to return to, and that's Jesus Christ, the Father, the leadership of God, and how we should treat and love each other and care for everybody. All right, let's go back to the board. Most of all, we're trying to find something. Radio Gospel, just keep holding on. We're trying to make Reverend Bob Nelson, Reverend Bob Little up there in Panola, Alabama, part of Sharper Records. He has a church up there. By the way, his church was burned down by the Klan, you know, several years ago, and he has rebuilt it. Moore and Sam Cooke, that's over the Tally Boys. All right, the William Brothers, C.D. Coverman, Virgil Harrison, Seven Songs of Soul, A Discipline Living in Christ, A Discipline Life. That is a very possible that you can live a discipline life. A mix of Saturday afternoon mixed music. That's some music that we play at just kind of a little bit of different flavor to it, but it's all good music. All music is safe here, nothing wrong. Here's one AAA induction from Blog Talk Radio. Let me see, is this that? Let's see, is this it? I'm looking for a noisy introduction. That's ready sometimes. Bolton Brothers, Boycott, Breath, Spirit, and Life. That's a powerful interview with Breath, Spirit, and Life. All right. Brothers in Christ, Carolina Superstars, Celebrating Black History Month, CEO Tony Sharper. Changes. All right, Changes, part two. Chester T. Baldwin, I Can Hear Mama Praying. Some Christmas music. All right, Christmas music. Class of 73, Take Over at the Lake. Let's see, we had to redo that. I
Take
think.
Down at the Lake. Take.
CNN Film, Sundays, American Jails, all right. Country Gospel, Capital Music, Country Gospel, Michael Steele on CPAC, The Gatherer, that's addressed to Henry Beach out of Florida, debut singer, Show Me and Add Me, all right, let's hope we get through it, Deep State, Discipline, equity. We want to give it a single that tongue out and eliminate it. Golden Crowns. Help me. Okay. Eight. Introduction. Okay. Okay. All right. So you're going through some different songs. Inner City Pastors, remember that? Inner City Pastors, introduction to all broadcasts. I'll sit on Gospel Blog Talk Radio. Let's see if this is it. That is it. Back to our music that we were playing before. Mix and let it play. Now you can't hear that in the radio station because it's going through the cell phone, but I can hear it and record it on my recorder on the GarageBand. I'm gonna turn that down. Now we're gonna go ahead, open up another tab. We're going to go to a host tools for the broadcast, Blog Talk Radio. We're going to go to audio clips. We're going to go to audio clips. And we are going to find Gold Crown Come Too Far Tour. That's the one we're looking for. Let's go to intro. Okay, that's going to be intro. That's the one we're looking for. We're going to delete it. That's the first thing we're going to do. Oh, man. Internet. That's... This is the... The F, H, I'll be on number 9. Let's see. H. Let's go to 10. Okay, let's find it. H. Intro. All broadcast High C Production Gospel Block Talk Radio. Okay, we just deleted that. Golden Crown. Okay, Golden Crown. Golden Crown is coming to for a tour. Golden Crown. Golden Crown is coming to 4.3. Golden Crown coming a long way. Golden Crown coming to 4.2. Golden Crown. Go back to the studio. Golden Crown is coming to 4.2 on Golden Crown. Okay.
Let's talk about the Zara jacket. And guys, if we have a photo, let's throw it up. But so this is what we're just learning about this jacket. Here we go. You can only see the side of it. So this is Melania Trump boarding Air Force One to head down to Texas. And the back of the jacket apparently reads, "I don't really care, do you?" And just to channel Kate Bennett, mm-hmm. who covers her every move, she always says,
"Okay, Melania." So that M is for. Let's go to uploads. This is G, H, and J, K, L. Let's go to 13, M, A. Melania's jacket. Let's edit it. Take that out. Save. And then it probably went out again. And oh man, something else here. Man. Okay, it is. What we're looking for is, let's go back. Okay. Introduction, Prayer, American Guns. Guns, guns, guns. We just think about guns and killing in this country. You can murder and kill. You can say you're sick, you're crazy, nothing, but you ain't gonna say nothing about guns. Everybody can get a hand on a gun. If you want a gun, you can get one. That's just all to it. Random place, Line Boys of Alabama, random place. There's just three things here. We're gonna go ahead and eliminate all three of these because they won't let us play them. But for some reason, they wouldn't know. Okay. Shit, get this now. I'm trying to delete the thing. All right. Let's delete that one. Delete this one. Now, three of them to be it. We're going to just play them. We're going to try to upload them later. All right. Anything that Blog Talk won't let us upload for whatever reason, it's been sitting here for so while, we're going to get it out of here. We'll try to upload it later. Okay. Moving right along. Put the music back up. See if they're going to reload. Okay, it reloaded. I still yet to figure out the settings in which when you direct dial, the call is always being dropped and the music interrupted and all kinds of crap like that. I don't know, is that Blog Talk Radio fault or my fault or my settings or what it is, but it is a problem. I've never used it, and it worked just like it's supposed to. It's always dropping the music and interruptions in the music and stuff like that. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Since we are on and Blog Talk will shut us off whenever they get ready, I'm going to go play some music for you. I think something is important in regards to politics, which is important about voting. New ad for politics. We're going to play that for you. We're going to play new ad politics. They're waiting in the real right intro. Here's the thing about the right. Let's turn this off. The thing about the right in this country, they're supposed to be about God, of what's right. That's why they got to the right and then to the left. It's supposed to be somehow, I reckon that's for, with Satan or that ain't with what is right. But with the right in this country, it was supposed to be right and white. That's just me saying that now. But anybody can be right. But in America, when they say right, you talk about the GOP, extreme right. You talking about KKK and all the other lunatics on the right. Think they're right in what they do. In fact, anybody that thinks they're right and don't have the foundation of God and spirit in their life is a lunatic. They're crazy. You need to follow what Jesus Christ gave, sound doctrine. We don't hear sound doctrine in this country no more. This is an ad for political ad, awakening of the real right. This is just an intro. Listen to it. If it would play. Look at there. It's got the numbers checking out, but I don't see it here playing. Let me bring it up. Okay? Nothing happening. All right.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. And welcome to House of Gospel Blog Talk Radio. Coming to you from 231 6th Avenue here in Beatrice, Alabama. We want to welcome you to our broadcast for today. You know, I have been watching and praying and paying attention to what's going on in America. And one of the questions is what is Donald Trump, the 45th president, President Donald Trump, doing to America? For one thing, God is still in control. Don't ever forget that. Another thing is that America has overcome a lot of things in its lifetime. And it's hopefully that it will overcome what is taking place here now in this country. You know, God can do anything, and he raised up all types of leaders. And he can raise them up and he can sit them down and do different things that he wants to do anytime he gets ready. One thing I want you all to remember, and that is this: God is still in control in the year of our Lord, 2018. How does Donald Trump affect America? There is a phase of going through here now that it appears that Donald Trump is lying. There is so much on one media in favor of Donald Trump, and then other media is against Donald Trump. But what is God saying? I look at President Barack Obama, the 44th president, and how he was so vehemently put upon, not that other presidents wasn't put upon too. And I look at what is taking place in this country today. And the one thing I want you all to remember, that is God is still in control. No matter how bad it looks, how bad it sounds, or how many lies it might appear, or that President Donald Trump, the 45th president, is saying, according to one media. Some is saying he's so good for America and what is taking place. But what's at the core of this is that there are basic human understandings of what's right and what is wrong and what's morally right. And you and I know personally what is morally right and what is spiritually right. And what God has placed in his words for what is right and how we live as human beings. But what do we actually act upon and believe? It appears to me that those that say that they are the Christian right, in other words, the ones are supposed to be right, it seems that they have placed on a shelf certain things such as lying, deception, adultery, infidelity, all the things that God say is wrong that seems to be rearing its head with this man, President Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States. The things that is said that he has done, the things that's indicated by him that he has done, and how he behaves as a rich and wealthy man, points to that something may be awry, but here is the question. Who knows the truth? God knows the truth. President Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States, knows the truth. But who is in control? God is in control. No matter how bad it looks, God still got it. So don't be afraid. Pray. Keep your eyes focused on what's supposed to be right, and that is right in God's word. Pray for this president. Pray for this nation. For God still is in control. He is putting America through something that America has asked for. It put away all of its moral and righteous thinking for the big riches, the big billionaire who's supposed to have all the money and how to make money. And they seem to think that money is the answer. Where is right and where is wrong? Where is morality and where is immorality? And it goes back to your own personal life and your choice. Stay with us today as we talk about the awakening of the real right in America. The awakening of the real right in America.
It feels like America is more divided than it's been in decades. Getting along with those who disagree on politics has become difficult, tearing families and communities apart. It seems like now, politics isn't just about what you think, but who you are. It's personal. We've seen this feeling cause growing extremism on both ends of the political spectrum. The events in Charlottesville, Virginia, showed the ability of white nationalists to assemble off the internet and into the real world. Earlier that same summer, left-wing extremists essentially shut down Evergreen State College because a white professor dared show up on a day white people were asked to be absent from campus. And it seems like left-wing and right-wing extremists are just getting the other side even more riled up. There's a name for this problem, and it's called identity politics. Identity politics is the tendency for people of a particular race, religion, gender, or ethnicity to organize politically around that special interest for the sole purpose of advancing that interest without concern or regard for any larger group or collective. You might ask, what's so bad about identity politics? You wouldn't care about identity politics if it was your identity group being discriminated against. This is a misunderstanding of what identity politics is. There is a time for identities to come together when they are being discriminated against as a class, but the goal of these movements are only ethical when they seek to remove the political impact of identity, not enforce it. The civil rights movement is a great example. The civil rights movement was not identity politics. It was about destroying identity politics, creating a society where we'd see people as individuals rather than members of groups. In the words of Martin Luther King Jr.,
says, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
That's not in line with the recent push on the left to create black-only dorms at colleges, or women-only film screenings, or spaces without white people. Nor is it in line with those on the right who believe America should be a Christian-only nation, or want to mandate gender roles, and obviously not those who want a white ethno-state. Let's treat other identities as we would have them treat ours. There is beauty in different people with different ideas and of different backgrounds coming together to form America. But when it comes to politics and policy, let's treat people as people, recognizing and celebrating their unique characteristics as individuals instead of reducing them into an identity group. I'm Joseph Klein. Thanks for watching.
Use fiction to comment on reality when reality currently seems so fantastic?
Yeah, well, it's a question I think many of us have been asking ourselves. I mean, I had dinner with Ian McEwan a few nights ago, and we were agreeing that if we had written down what has really happened in the world and offered it to our publishers as a novel, the publisher would have turned it down for being too unbelievable. You know, so the truth is stranger than fiction line has never been more true. And I think what happens is that writers can perhaps in a way be the truth tellers in a moment when there's so much fakery around.
Well, you mentioned truth in your answer, and you know the subject of truth is so central to this moment. Do you still have faith in an objective, verifiable truth?
Well, I think, you know, there's always been an argument about the truth. You know, that truth is different for different people. That's always been the case. There's a degree of subjectivity. But there are things that are objective. There are things that are so and other things that are not so. And I think when we're talking about the very large scale of what's happening in a society, it's very important, I think, that people in a society have some broad agreement about the nature of reality. Otherwise, it's a very dangerous thing.
You do capture in The Golden House this sort of topsy-turvy reality that we're living. You have this character called the Joker who runs for the US president. You write that suddenly lying was funny and hatred was funny and bigotry was funny. And, you know, they're things that we previously didn't find even remotely amusing.
Yeah, I mean, it's become very black, the comedy in America now. And there's a line in the novel where one of the characters says that it's as if DC, that's to say comics, has taken over DC, that's to say Washington, and as if we're in the business of being ruled by, you know, by grotesques and cartoons. And that's why the words Donald Trump don't occur in the novel, but there is this Trump-esque version of Batman's archenemy instead.
I sometimes wonder if ridicule is used enough as a weapon, because a lot of what we see in politics is genuinely ridiculous, and nothing inflames mm-hmm. people with gigantic egos more than being ridiculed.
Well, I agree with that, and I think actually one of the things that I admire right now in America is the way in which comedians are doing that, the way in which Saturday Night Live and John Oliver and Bill Maher and Stephen Colbert and Samantha Bee, all these figures are using comedy as a way of getting and actually making quite serious political points, but also getting under the skin of a notoriously thin-skinned president.
Next year is the 30th anniversary of the publication of the Satanic Verses, and yet here we are all these years later, and the politics of offence and Islamist extremism are once again front and centre. How do you think things are different now, though?
Well, you know, what's happened in the last 30 years is the rise of a whole wave of terror attacks, which weren't happening in the same way 30 years ago, and we have to combat those. But I also, you know, I just think one has to hold on to one's principles, and one has to hold on to the idea that we have the right to talk about whatever we like and criticize, as you were saying, satirize any form of power, whether secular or theocratic, and we just have to push on.
You personally have had to endure huge sacrifices in the name of that belief. How does it make you feel in this day and age to therefore see American colleges hound out people with politically incorrect viewpoints or this advocacy of so-called trigger warnings?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken out against all that stuff. I think it's pretty absurd. I think, you know, universities are safe spaces for thought, not safe spaces from thought. And I also think that it is somewhat exaggerated, the amount of this stuff that's going on, because, you know, I teach at New York University, NYU, and I, before that, I taught in Atlanta at Emory University. And I go around America lecturing at quite a lot of colleges, and I have literally never encountered a single student who has talked in this way, who has demanded safe spaces or trigger warnings or who wants to deplatform people or et cetera. So I know there is some of it going on, but there's also an enormous amount of the American Academy where it doesn't go on, and where actually my students, when these subjects are brought up, are quite contemptuous of that kind of point of view. So I think let's not overstate what's going on.
What do you think about mm-hmm. this idea that a person's identity is central to the credibility of their argument?
What is interesting to me about the subject of identity is first of all, that it is so vividly alive in people's minds right now. And secondly, that it doesn't mean the same thing everywhere. So in India, for example, which is where the Goldens come from originally, the subject is really about religious identity. When you talk about identity, you're talking about Hindu-Muslim issues. In America, you're really talking more about race and gender issues. And right at this moment, you're talking about actually, what is it to be an American in the age of Trump? What is America? What is the America that he wants to make great again? And what I worry about is that in all of this, and the novel goes into this somewhat, is that we're being asked to narrow our identities, to define our identities more and more narrowly as of one thing, this and not that. Whereas actually anybody who reads novels and anybody who loves novels knows that human beings aren't like that, that human identity is actually very multiple and complicated and even contradictory, and that's what makes us rich characters. That's what makes us interesting as human beings, that we are many things, not one.
You speak of people who love novels. I think it's fair to say your most loved novel is Midnight's Children. How does it make you feel to know that now it's being read by people who weren't even alive when you wrote it?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the point of doing this kind of thing, I think, because I think if you're my sort of writer, what you hope to do is to write books that will endure and that will, you know, if you're lucky, outlast you. So, I mean, I think the fact that Midnight's Children, which is whatever it is, 36 years old, is still, you know, has some meaning and interest for young people who weren't, as you say, weren't alive when I wrote it. I mean, that feels like the biggest prize of all, you know, you know, the one or two of the other books, which are as old as that, or almost as old as that, you know, are beginning to have the same experience. I mean, you know, the Satanic Verses, which, as you said, is coming up for 30, is finally allowed to have the ordinary life of a novel, and people can read it as a novel and discover that a lot of people read it and discover that it's funny. One of the things that nobody ever said about that book at the time is that it was funny, because what happened to it wasn't funny. And now people are discovering that it's actually many ways quite a comic novel. So, I mean, I love it that my books go on being interesting. You know, it would be very sad if they were just to disappear and be forgotten.
Well, great pleasure to speak to you about your new novel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Last year, as American liberals struggled to make sense of the Donald Trump phenomenon, historian Mark Lilla offered his analysis in the pages of the New York Times. His essay took his fellow liberals to task for what he called the, quote, moral panic of identity politics, arguing that brand of politics had cost the Democrats the election and liberalism so much more. It was provocative and is now the stepping-off point for his latest book that's called The Once and Future Liberal, After Identity Politics. Mark Lilla is professor of humanities at Columbia University and joins us now on the line from New York, New York. Mark, it's good to have you on TVO tonight. How are you doing?
Good to be here, Steve.
Excellent. Let's just start with a basic definition. How are you defining identity liberalism?
Well, there are really two periods of identity politics on the liberal side ever since the 1950s. There was one brand of identity politics that was about incorporating groups, African-Americans, women, gays, into the great American democratic we, saying that we're citizens just like you and we deserve to be treated equally. Then in the 70s and 80s, there was a shift to a second kind of identity politics, which was more personal and about myself and my own very complex identity, and also a politics of difference. So rather than it being about bringing us together into a, as I said, great democratic we, instead, doubts were raised about the existence of it, and politics came to be conceived of on our liberal side as a politics of groups, of movements, and not party politics with a message that would offer a vision of American destiny that would attract Americans from all walks of life.
And why do you think it became so negative that it cost, in part, Hillary Clinton the election?
Well, you know, many things go into a presidential election loss, and of course she won the popular vote. But the election of Trump is the culmination, really, of 30 to 40 years of a failed political strategy. During the Reagan years, when Reagan essentially delegitimized the use of government to meet social problems, it was a time for liberals to offer a new liberal vision of what makes us, about our rights, but also our duties and our obligations to each other, and to offer a political vision as opposed to Reagan's anti-political division. Instead, this second kind of identity politics grew up, And for that and many other reasons, people began drifting away from the Democratic Party. And for example, and that has nothing to do with presidential elections. During the Obama years, for example, the Democratic Party lost roughly 1,000 seats in state legislatures in this country. Republicans now hold have state two-thirds of our state legislatures, two-thirds of the governorships, and they control half of the states outright. Democrats only control seven states. So whatever the liberal message has been, it's been rejected by a vast majority of Americans, I think, or at least a vast group that we need to attract again. And so we've steadily lost face, so to speak, before the American public. Liberal has become a dirty word. And even when Democrats propose policies that people like, as soon as they're labeled liberal or Democratic, people reject them. So clearly we've lost the contest for the American imagination.
And it's interesting that that's happened because, of course, what are we now, 56, 57 years removed from probably the greatest inaugural ever. It was the Democrat President John Kennedy who said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I guess today it's, you know, what does my country owe me by virtue of my identity? And I guess we need to know a little more about how we got, or how your party, I guess, got from there to here.
Well, part of it is, I think, a fixation on movement politics as opposed to party politics. When, after George McGovern's election, what had been the new left in this country retreated to universities and became important in the Democratic Party. And their conception of politics essentially was that parties don't work. For anything to change in this country, you need social movements. Now, there was a period in American history where all the great reforms that took place through movement politics and not through party politics. And so from during that period, we got civil rights, we got the women's movement, the early women's movement, and the early gay rights movement. But ever since 1980, all the action has been on the Republican side, and they've focused on building a party from the grassroots up. And we've not done that. And it's in the nature of movement politics to focus on one particular issue rather than, you know, a whole host of issues, and to become ever more extreme in the demands. And there are internal fights over who is the most pure. And that kind of thinking and those habits are bad habits and bad thinking for really building a Democratic majority. And the perversity of it, and this is a big theme in the book, the perversity of it is that we are less and less able to protect the groups whom these groups say that they represent because we do not have institutional power. Institutional power can trump movement power every time. And so there needs to be a new way of thinking about how to invest our energies on the liberal side of the spectrum.
As we try to understand this phenomenon better, I'd like you to compare and contrast two terms that you use in your book and help us understand how they are different. You talk about the Roosevelt and the Reagan dispensation. Help us understand that better.
Well, one way of dividing up 20th century political history is to think of two dispensations. Now, the word dispensation, those of your viewers who dabble in Protestant theology will know what I mean. A dispensation, like the Old Testament dispensation, New Testament dispensation, means that certain rules apply. And from the New Deal, excuse me, up until the 1970s, certain rules applied. The Democratic Party spoke about solidarity and equal rights. It had a robust sense of what government could do to guarantee those things. And it really set the terms of political debate, so much so that Republicans had to respond in like terms. So, for example, Richard Nixon proposed a guaranteed minimum income. He also proposed national health insurance, but he wanted Republican versions of those. So in a sense, the terms of debate had been set by the New Deal. With the election of Reagan, the terms of debate shifted. Government began to look incompetent or illegitimate. The focus became on economic growth. Government became the problem. Individual effort and initiative was praised and idealized. The picture of the country was of individuals and their families and maybe in their social groups and churches, but not a country of citizens engaged in a common political effort. And in a sense, Democrats had to adapt to that as well. So it was Bill Clinton who said that the age of big government is over. And both he and Barack Obama focused heavily on economic growth. So the terms of debate have been set by the Republicans, and that's been very frustrating for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, because it has meant that there's not been a focus on protecting jobs and unions and the like. Now, my view is that these two dispensations are now over, that Donald Trump actually brought an end to the Reagan dispensation, not by moving further to the left or further to the right, but by coming up from below. And now we're left with two visions of America, the Roosevelt one and the Reagan one, and neither one is compelling to most Americans anymore. We're living in a vision-free era in the United States, and that, I think, creates an opportunity for both sides. I think that whichever side is the first to offer a hopeful, compelling vision of American destiny that people can recognize themselves in will be able to determine the shape of American politics in the coming decades.
What I found interesting about that answer, though, is that despite 8 years of Clinton and 8 years of Obama, you don't seem to think that, unless I'm inferring incorrectly here, you don't seem to think those two presidents pursued a truly liberal agenda. And, you know, to be sure, if you watch a lot of American media, I mean, these guys are the closest things to democratic Marxist socialists there are out there. So figure that all out for me, if you would.
Well, I would not at all call them Marxist socialists. I teach political theory for a living, and those words have a very specific meaning for me. What I'm saying is that even when they wanted to pursue more classic liberal goals, they had to cast it in terms that were not those of the Roosevelt era, but rather in terms of empowering individuals and empowering families. What dropped out during the Reagan dispensation was any talk on both sides of public duty, of what we owe to each other. The rhetoric was about rights and not about sacrifice. You know, Republicans got us involved in many wars, but they never imposed a sacrifice on American citizens because they understood that that would break their view of the country. And Democrats have not been speaking about duty. They only speak about rights and the rights of particular groups in particular. So the idea that we owe something to our country has dropped out. And so, you know, the American presidency doesn't matter as much as Americans think and certainly as foreigners think. A president can propose, but a Congress can dispose, Supreme Court can dispose, and state and local governments can fail to enforce and enact things that are passed at the federal level. And so that's why the thinking needs to focus on not the presidency, but about rebuilding a party with a message that reaches people in all walks of life in the country.
I take your point on that, but you know, unless I missed it, you don't have a lot of good things to say about Barack Obama in the book. And you know, notwithstanding that, certainly from north of the border, the view on Obama was that he was, I think overwhelmingly most Canadians thought he was a pretty progressive president. Obamacare is in, It refuses to die, despite the efforts of the current president and some in the Congress. Don't you consider that a significant liberal achievement?
I do. It's a huge liberal achievement. The problem was that he was, I mean, his intentions were very progressive. The problem is that the country wasn't there. And so even when he proposed it, you know, he had to get things through Congress. It had to pass muster with the Supreme Court. And that was very difficult. So he was not able to pursue many of the things that he wanted to pursue. I have no problem with Barack Obama's presidency. He was simply not able to achieve as much as he needed to achieve. And I think he would put it this way, because the Republicans have dominated the public